Let me ask you this.
What in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here?
Sports Central. Chicago Sports Conversation with Adam Hogue.
Go.
This is Sports Central.
Go.
On demand and streaming live on WGNRadio.com.
This is Sports Central, still in Minnesota. We were supposed to be back in Chicago today, but flight delays and problems. A lot of people experiencing those with the weather back in Chicago and just the amount of people trying to get out of Minneapolis today. So it is Monday, February 5th, 2018, and we are still in the Mall of America. It's not really Radio Row anymore, but we are still here and recapping a incredible Super Bowl yesterday inside U.S. Bank Stadium. My name is Adam Hogue. If you missed any of our shows last week from Radio Row, you can go back and find all those interviews. They're on iTunes, the Google Play Store. Please rate and review our first week of Sports Central. Hope you enjoyed it, and we're going to keep it going. Hopefully, I'll be back in Chicago tomorrow, but Kevin Powell is back there right now and joining me for today's show. As a man, it was a great game, wasn't it, Kevin?
It was, and you know, it's funny, I ran into Mr. Cat, Dave Ennett, as I was walking into the station today, and Teddy Greenstein actually just posted a column at ChicagoTribune.com.
I saw that.
Yeah, and because Dave said, he goes, you know what, the way Doug Peterson called that game was very similar to what Fitz did in the Music City Bowl, which you were there for and you saw up close just like you did yesterday. And I'm like, yeah, that's a good point, Dave. And I kind of didn't have a chance to read Teddy's full thing, but it's a more of a... look, I knocked Peterson hard for going for a two-point conversion in the first half. That to me is like bunting in baseball. Just never do that. Do not go for the two-point conversion in the first half, unless you really, you know, save that for the end of the game. But you got to give it to Doug Peterson. The fourth and goal, you know, he had a chip shot, 3 points right there, and he pulled it off. So I don't know your thoughts on that comparison that I've seen. You know, Dave mentioned to me, and then I see Teddy post that. You've seen both up close. What are your thoughts on that comparison?
Yeah, let's dive into that here, because I did just read Teddy's piece. Real quick, the phone number is 312-235-2525. Last week, we really weren't able to take your phone calls because of all the guests we had on Radio Row, but plenty of time today if you'd like to react to the game. Anything with Alshon Jeffrey getting his Super Bowl and whether or not you think that was really a true guarantee last year that he made when he was still with the Bears. And plenty of other topics too, including Frank Reich borrowing a play from the Bears. Pretty cool story after the game yesterday. We're going to get to all of that. Joe Romano's our producer. Let's jump right in with our lead.
He is throwing it deep for the end zone, and it is batted around, and it's complete. And the game is over! The game is over! The Philadelphia Eagles are Super Bowl champions!
That's the call from the Eagles Radio Network. And I got to say, Kevin, I was still expecting that Hail Mary to work out.
Same. I was, talking to friends about, I wasn't completely stunned that the Eagles were able to get to Brady with just over, and I thought Al Michaels put it perfectly. By the way, where were you sitting at? Were you in the press box? They have to have some sort of auxiliary, right?
Yeah, I was in the auxiliary, which was end zone way up high in the upper deck.
Okay.
It was fine for watching the game.
Right.
A little hard to see Justin Timberlake.
That's fine. He didn't miss a whole lot. We can get to that a little bit too. I was underwhelmed. I'll just say that. I thought Al Michaels called a heck of a game, and it was about 2 minutes and 20 seconds left, the Patriots get the ball back. They're down by 5 at that point. You figured, to me, I'm like, okay. I mean, this is the story is writing itself. Brady's just going to drive down the field. He's going to score a touchdown, and he's going to get another ring. And I wasn't shocked that Philly was able to get to Brady or at least create some sort of pressure. I was stunned to see Brady cough that football up, because he's the last guy you would expect to not protect the football in that moment. I just couldn't see that happening. Tom Brady, of all people, fumbling away the ball. I mean, give the Eagles all the credit, and he, you know, is under a lot of duress there, but I was not expecting that scenario to play out.
Yeah, I'm not going to put that on Brady, because I feel like, you know, the pocket was closing. He was trying to get rid of the football. It's a desperate situation, and it was just a great play to knock the ball loose. The Eagles,
I don't know if I'm necessarily putting. I was just shocked to see it. I just didn't.
Right,
you just figured, okay, Tom Brady and the Patriots are going to march down the field and beat the Eagles. Instead, you know, the storyline flips, and Brady fumbles the ball, and the Eagles get it.
I was shocked.
Give the Eagles a ton of credit. Yeah. I mean, they played great, but the coaching, especially Doug Peterson's game plan, was really, really well done. And you bring up this story that Teddy has this morning with Pat Fitzgerald. Apparently, Pat Fitzgerald texted Teddy right before the game with an ESPN.com story about the analytics that the Eagles use to make decisions within a football game. And this football game played out very similar to what Northwestern did against Kentucky in the Music City Bowl, with the decision to pass on a chip shot field goal on fourth down and go for the touchdown near the goal line and basically run the exact same trick play. And it worked for the Eagles. It did not work for Northwestern because a block wasn't held. But then late in the game, also going for it on fourth down and really just trying to ice the game instead of punting it away and giving the other team the football, there are actual analytics behind these decisions that these coaches are using. And we've seen over the last few years Pat Fitzgerald become very, very aggressive. Doug Peterson was very, very aggressive. He talked about that you have to be aggressive to win the Super Bowl. If you're not aggressive, you're just going to be 8-8. How many conservative head coaches do we see in the NFL who end up closer to 8-8 than winning the Super Bowl? Jeff Fisher come to mind. John Fox come to mind a little bit.
Yeah.
So there's some actual math behind this, and a very interesting piece from Teddy Greenstein in the Tribune this morning backing this up.
Yeah, this goes. I remember seeing, man, this had to have been 5-10 years ago, where ESPN did a little web feature, 5-minute video thing, about a high school football coach that had begun to apply analytics and some really in-depth research that he had done on his own towards his game plan. He wouldn't punt ever. No matter if they were back. So, I mean, obviously that applies a little bit differently to high school, but it's interesting to see analytics starting to work itself into football more. Of course, it's like taken over baseball, and we're seeing it applied to even hockey and basketball a little bit. But, you know, one of the things, as I'm watching the game, experience, as much as people talk about it, and Bill Belichick said it himself, that experience doesn't matter a whole lot. And I don't think it actually does for the players. Maybe a little bit, but I don't think it's a major factor. But for coaching, I really think it does. I mean, for a few moments there, I was really questioning Doug Peterson, but maybe I'm wrong. Maybe Peterson was making these decisions based off analytics and doing these sorts of things. So I'm interested to see how many coaches are going to apply more analytic stats, numbers, things like that into their game plan.
Well, I agree with you that I didn't like the chasing of 1 point.
I hated that. I hated it. It is a pet peeve of mine, Adam Hogue. Well, Do not go for two that early and don't waste timeouts early in games.
Yeah, and some people pointed out later, because I said, well, hey, wouldn't it be nice if the Eagles had one more point here? And they pointed out, well, that same aggressiveness is what Doug Peterson did when he went for the touchdown at the goal line. To me, though, the risk and reward is different.
Yeah.
You get 4 points there instead of just getting four extra points instead of just getting one extra point by going for the two. So I didn't like that, but that was really the only thing I didn't agree with Doug Peterson doing. I like going for it on fourth down late in the game, too, because worst-case scenario is you're down 8 there, and it's still a one-possession game, and the Patriots are going to get the ball back anyway.
Right.
So I like the aggressiveness there, and I think it helped them win the game.
You also got to wonder about the kicker and how that changes his mentality. If you pass up in an extra point because the guy missing an extra point,
does that
get into his head about whether he's trusted or not?
We saw some college special teams yesterday, didn't we?
That was bad.
what was happening?
It was like Bears special teams to a...
We saw Guskowski miss a PAT and a field goal in the first half alone.
Dan, he's so solid.
Right.
You're not expecting that.
No, you don't see that from the Patriots.
Just a crazy, especially the first half, but the entire game. But that first half was on steroids. I mean, the entertainment value, the big plays. You got Corey Clement and James White going back and forth. Two Wisconsin running backs making big plays. You had, they shattered the yardage record, all-time yardage record, by like 200 yards in this game.
Yeah, and I think the record was broken. I want to say it was in the third quarter still.
Yeah.
I think it was late in the third quarter or at least early in the fourth quarter. Yeah, I mean, it was big play after big play. I mean, I think it was double-digit 20-plus yard plays. I think there was like 7 30-yard or more plays, something like that. So there was a ton of excitement, and it was back and forth. It was a great Super Bowl. Al Michaels called it one of the greats. It's tough to argue. I just love when I know people are going to like cringe hearing me say this. I like when the Patriots in the Super Bowl because it feels bigger. I think it's good for the NFL. I think it's good for ratings. As much as people hate seeing Tom Brady and the Patriots back in the Super Bowl, one, the game's always going to be entertaining. You can guarantee that. How many Super Bowls have they been in now? Eight Super Bowls, and they've all been close. I think six or seven of those have been decided by 4 points or less, something like that. So you get a good game. I when the AFC title game went down, people were so pissed that the Jags had blown that lead to the Patriots, and I'm like, really? Do we want to see a Jacksonville versus Philly Super Bowl?
Yeah, Bortles versus Foles.
Nah, come on. Yeah. I mean, as much as like diehard football fans want that, I mean, Tom Brady is like, he's on Michael Jordan level, where he's even like on Tiger Woods. I always talk about the Tiger Woods factor. You don't have to be a diehard golf fan. If Tiger's on Sunday, let's say at Augusta, and he's in contention, everyone's watching that tournament.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, if Michael Jordan was playing, and even if you don't like basketball, you were watching to watch the spectacle that is Michael Jordan. That's where Tom Brady's at right now. I kind of like when the Patriots are in. It's not like I'm rooting for them, but I'm like, okay, I can roll with the Patriots Super Bowl.
Yeah, that's Kevin Powell back in Chicago. Adam Hoge, I am out in Minnesota, still stranded here in the Mall of America.
Are mall walkers doing laps around you right now?
we've now moved into our secluded media area, so I'm at least not in the middle of the mall by myself because they did rip down Radio Row. But Joe, let's play the Frank Reich stuff. I know we were going to talk about Alshon Jeffrey first, but since we're talking about Doug Peterson and the job he did last night with this offense and some of the calls that were made, that included the trick play on the fourth down we were just talking about at the goal line, which you're watching this play, and I'm sitting there and I'm going, that looked really, really familiar, and then it hit me. The Bears ran that play, the same exact play, in that same exact end zone, in the same stadium, a year ago, with Matt Barkley at quarterback in Week 17. It was a meaningless Week 17 game, but Matt Barkley went into motion, Jeremy Langford took the snap, flipped it back to Cameron Meredith, who then threw to a wide-open Matt Barkley. So, okay, maybe that's just a coincidence. Well, it turns out that was where the Eagles took it from. And Frank Reich, their offensive coordinator, talked about this after the game.
We saw it on film. You know, we saw it on film. And, you know, that play's been, there's several different variations of that plays that we've seen people run. We were, in particular, copying the Bears version of it and just been working on it. And really, the part that you work on is not so much the execution, but the acting part of it, you know, and the timing of it. And they did it to perfection.
Frank, just to clarify, you said Bears version of the play, is that the one they ran here last year against the Vikings?
Yeah, it was. Because we were thinking about running it last week. And we were wondering, could we run it against the Vikings after the Bears had already run it against them a year before? And we were ready to run it last week, or 2 weeks ago, but the opportunity didn't come up and we didn't need it. And then so it was actually probably worked out for the best to hold it right against these guys.
So does Dow Loggins get a Super Bowl ring? That's my first question, Adam.
And Matt Barkley, too.
Yeah. You know, when I first saw that play, I just at first glance, I thought it was that 2-point conversion initially. Just, you know, it happened so fast. The 2-point conversion with Trubisky this year, which I think was against the Vikings on Monday. That's what I thought it was.
No, that was a little different because that turned into a zone read where Trubisky actually kept it and ran it in. But similar situation for sure near the goal line. So here's what's interesting. Talking to Alshon Jeffrey then about this play, because remember, Mike Groh is the Eagles wide receivers coach and was with the Bears for 3 years. Now, he wasn't with the Bears last year when they ran this play, but apparently this play had already been in the offense for a couple seasons. Remember, Dow Loggins was with Groh on the staff, Dow Loggins on the staff, and Adam Gase. It sounded like that was when this play was put in, because Jeffrey said that it was actually Groh who brought this to the Eagles, that brought this in a few weeks ago and installed it into the offense. So very interesting Bears connection here. You're just not expecting something run by Matt Barkley and Jeremy Langford and Cameron Meredith, three guys who didn't even play a snap for the Bears. And this turns out being a huge play for the Eagles in a much bigger stage, winning the Super Bowl.
They ran it to perfection. I mean, you could not run. If Foles sold it perfectly, he kind of does the thing where he's like sort of waiting for a block and he's kind of hiding behind another guy and then he peels out and he's wide open. I love the trickery we saw yesterday. Even with the Brady pass, which he dropped, could have been a huge play, but I love seeing a little trickery in the big game.
Well, we did learn Nick Foles, better wide receiver than Tom Brady.
You know, Brady's getting a lot of flack for that. It was a little bit out there, but Brady is
slow.
He's a 40-year-old veteran quarterback.
You expect a wide receiver to catch that ball.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not sure you're expecting Tom Brady to catch it. It wasn't the greatest throw, although it did work. I mean, he was open, and it would have been a big play.
It was a third down play, too. Would have been huge.
Yeah, huge, and then they went for it on fourth and didn't get it. Yeah. So that was a big moment in the game as well.
Another funny thing about that, and Adam, I'm not sure how much you saw the pregame, but they were talking about Nick Foles and how athletic he was in college or in high school. He went to the same high school as Drew Brees, and they showed this this play where he posterized this dude in basketball, and it's like, yeah, how much of an athlete is this guy? And then sure enough, he has a touchdown catch in the Super Bowl.
Yeah. Had a huge game.
Unbelievable story. I mean, seriously, who would have thought that Nick Foles, this time last year, would be winning a Super Bowl with the Eagles? You know, he signed with the Eagles for a lot less money than the Bears paid Mike Glennon. He's the backup. He doesn't play the whole year, and then all of a sudden Carson Wentz goes down. Philadelphia thinks that their season's over, and Nick Foles plays the way he did and outduels Tom Brady in a Super Bowl, which, by the way, Brady played great.
Oh, over 500 yards passing, no interceptions, three touchdowns. He was outstanding, and his accuracy, everything was spot on.
And Foles just elevated his game to a different level. What an incredible story. We're going to take a quick timeout. Eric Edholm from Pro Football Weekly will join us next. He was here in Minnesota during the week. Always has a good insight on these big games, so we'll talk to him next. You're listening to Sports Central on WGN.
All right, let's continue this love fest.
There it is.
It's Sports Central with Adam Hoge.
No big deal.
On demand and in real time on WGNRadio.com.
Back here on Sports Central in Minnesota, still in Minnesota. Hopefully we'll get back to Chicago soon. Kevin Powell is back in our studio in Chicago, though. He joins the show today. And on the phone, Eric Edholm from Pro Football Weekly. You can follow him on Twitter at Eric_Edholm. And Eric, you were out here this past week. I know in all your analysts leading up to the game, you nailed it. You said that there was going to be over 1,100 yards of offense in the Super Bowl.
I did. I'm glad people saw that on. I wish I could have said that. I thought we'd have some points. I did. I did not see the most yards in an NFL game ever, playoffs or otherwise. So, yeah, I was a little off on that, but I did think there'd be a little up and down on the field.
Here's my question for you and Adam. What do the Eagles do at the quarterback spot now? I mean, they're still all in on Wentz, right? Obviously, now they're going to move on, but is Wentz the bona fide starter, no questions asked, going into next season?
Yeah, he is. And then, you know, obviously anyone thinking that there's a controversy, I think, is obviously off base here. But it does, you know, provide a, or at least set up a really interesting offseason for them, because Wentz is coming off the torn ACL, also suffered a torn LCL there. So, you know, if you look at somebody like Carson Palmer, who suffered one later in the year, he came back and didn't miss a snap the following season. You know, we've seen quarterbacks be able to return, and then, you know, Wentz the tough kid. I'm sure his rehab is expected to go very well. You know, by, you know, March, we may have a pretty good idea where he's at. But do you really know? Are you willing to go into next season with Foles traded somewhere else? You might get an interesting return. His value will never be higher than it is right now. But that means you have to probably sign a veteran quarterback and feel good about them stepping in, taking all the offseason reps until Wentz is ready. Is that beginning of training camp? Maybe. Maybe not. We don't know. So there is a layer of risk involved. Obviously, winning a Super Bowl kind of helps buttress that. But, yeah, if you do trade Foles, you're assuming Carson Wentz is going to be healthy, and that's never a sure thing.
Well, and Eric, we just witnessed the value and the importance of having a good backup quarterback who knows the system and can execute the offense when the starter goes down. So, sure, they can go out and maybe get something for Nick Foles by trading him, but that weakens your team because they don't win the Super Bowl without Nick Foles, without Nick Foles being there on the roster. So I'm not sure that's the smartest decision.
Right, and, you know, maybe it's the kind of thing where you hold on to him, you keep him, and I know there are a lot of other veteran quarterbacks in play this offseason, whether it's you know, any of the Vikings quarterbacks or, you know, Kirk Cousins or whomever else, sure. Draft looks pretty decent, too. There could be some decent prospects there, too. But there are always injuries at the position. So whether it's your own guy, Wentz, getting hurt, or whether it's some other team that didn't quite fulfill its needs, gets into training camp, suffers an injury at the position, like a Ryan Tannehill last year, then once you've seen Wentz and see where he is in his rehab 4 or 5 months later, if he's back, you're feeling good about it, okay, maybe then I could understand it. That would make a little more sense. There's always somebody who out of nowhere needs a quarterback in August. I might, like you, resist the urge because, like you said, it's such a layer of insurance that if Tom Brady had gotten hurt at any point down the stretch after Garoppolo was traded, they're out. They're going to lose their first playoff game. I just don't think Brian Hoyer would have done it. But like you said, Foles gave them something that you really can't quantify.
Eric, we were talking off the top of the show about how, you know, I was screaming at my TV when Doug Peterson was going for a two-point conversion in the first half. That's inexcusable, but we you know, people kind of took a step back today and we're re-looking at everything and some of his fourth down decisions, and there was some stuff coming out. Teddy Greenstein had a piece about analytics kind of working themselves into the game of football like we've seen in other sports. What did you make of the way Peterson coached, and even Belichick, too?
Yeah, he looks really good when the plays work. Obviously, right. I know the two-pointer is the exception there, but I mean, you know, he kept his foot on the gas pedal pretty much throughout, and you know, maybe you could say after the turnover he was a little smarter about how he ran the football late in the game there, but still, you know, it was one of those things where this was his philosophy all along. It didn't work last year because Carson Wentz was still developing. They were 5-9 before winning their last two games. A lot of people questioned Doug Peterson's wisdom. A lot of people threw shots at him. Hey, this is a guy who was coaching high school 8-9 years ago. He doesn't belong in the NFL as a head coach. Well, guess what? You know, you put the players in the right position. You match that with that aggressive forward-thinking approach, whether it's, you know, taking advantage of some of the numbers, you know, and saying, look, teams should go for it more often on fourth down. Teams should try more two-point conversions. You've got to be more aggressive, different parts of the field. Whatever that is, Peterson stuck to his guns with a backup quarterback against a team that has, you know, an unimpeachable Super Bowl record. He wasn't going to change just because he was playing the vaunted Patriots. So I love the approach. Even if he had failed, he would have gone down in the same way that he had coached the remainder of the season, which is what you want out of your head football coach.
Eric Edholm from Pro Football Weekly joining us here on Sports Central. Eric, what'd you make of the Malcolm Butler situation yesterday? It seems like there has to be more to the story.
Yeah, we don't know what's going on. That's the best way I can say it right now. I thought it was so bizarre that a guy who played 97% of their defensive snaps this season, you know, granted, even if his role had been a little bit reduced in the Tennessee game, he struggled a little bit. He didn't play quite as many snaps, I don't think, against the Jacksonville Jaguars. Everybody still expected him to be out there the majority of the time, whether it was, you know, in nickel inside, covering some of those quicker receivers, or whether it was in his traditional role outside. Now, a lot of people are bashing Belichick, and I understand that. That was my reaction last night. How can you get torched time and time again? And even if you bench him to start the game, aren't you thinking about pulling him in there at some point to help sort of staunch the bleeding a little bit? I do think there is more to this. There have been a lot of sort of strange rumors about him arriving late, not with the team. He had a flu. He had this and that. He's upset about his contract. He may have said something. There may have been an incident Saturday night. All these things are flying around, none of them substantiated yet. But I think Belichick is actually sort of kind of covering for his player here. That's the best guess that I have, and I think something will come out in the coming days and maybe weeks.
Well, Butler postgame, here's a direct quote. I don't know what it was. I guess I wasn't playing good or they didn't feel comfortable. I don't know, but I could have changed that game.
And, you know, it's hard to argue when you watch Johnson Batamosi, a guy who was a career special teamer before this season, miss tackles. And when you watch Jordan Richards flail around out there and you see Eric Rowe struggle badly in the first half and really not have a great game overall. I mean, you can't tell me. I heard, you know, Matt Patricia, the defensive coordinator, the new Lions head coach, is talking about, well, there's only so many packages and we just couldn't get him in. I mean, you know, he played one snap and it was on special teams. He played on one punt team snap in the second quarter. That's it. You can't tell me there's not more to the story than, and who knows, maybe he would have helped out.
Hey, Hey, Eric, what did you think about the Super Bowl in Minnesota? You were up here, just the whole experience?
It was obviously, I'm sure people have talked about the cold weather and the mall and all that. I mean, I've always liked Minnesota. Minneapolis is a great place. Of course, when you're out at the Mall America, it feels like you're in North Dakota. There's really not much around it other than the mall itself. So was it odd to go, you know, next to the Sbarro and do Radio Row stuff and then walk down next to the Spencer's Gifts and then go see a press conference? Yeah. But overall, I think it was great. I just have gotten the sense from talking to a few people around there, you know, that we're probably not going to see a cold weather Super Bowl for any time soon. I think this may have been the last one, you know, for the time being. I don't think that's sort of in their plans. I think they're going back more towards the warmer cities, the southern cities, the new stadiums, of course. But yeah, it doesn't quite add up for me that we're going to see another Super Bowl in Minnesota anytime soon.
Well, all the football fans felt really, really, really bad for all the reporters that had to go to Minneapolis to cover the Super Bowl. I'm not saying it was
right?
But man, some of these people tweeting, it's like, shut up, you're covering the Super Bowl. That's a dream job right there.
Yeah, and it's a great stadium, too. I mean, look, you guys saw it. I mean, it's an outstanding place for football.
Yeah.
I love that stadium. That was my third time in it. It was outstanding last night, a perfect venue for that game. Yeah, the weather wasn't great this week, but I mean,
hey Eric, it's a Super Bowl. Come on. Your thoughts on you know, I for one am not jaded when it comes to the Patriots. I'm not exhausted by the Patriots' continued success. I appreciate greatness. How much longer do you think this Belichick Brady thing is going to go on for? And even Gronk after the game didn't sound like a 100% sure bet that he would be back. What's your thoughts on the Belichick-Brady duel? How much longer are these two going to do it for? And your thoughts on Gronk's comments after the game?
Yeah, I mean, I've learned to not write their obituary too soon, or at least not publish it. I mean, you know, we've seen them come back from the dead how many times? 2014, they looked old and tired and not a playoff team. And guess what? They won the Super Bowl the next, two of the next 3 years. So I do think we can lock 2018 for both Brady and Belichick. I think it's going to happen. Gronk, I think, will be back. I think some of that may have been contractually related. You know, he wants to get paid, I think. So, obviously, the concussion is a concern. The injuries, they piled up for him. He's 29 in May. He's still technically in the prime of his career. But, you know, we've also seen younger guys walk away from the game in this era of everything we know about head injuries and such.
Follow him on Twitter at Eric_Edholm. Read him at ProFootballWeekly.com. Eric, great work this week. Thanks for joining us.
All right, fellas. Thank you.
Thanks, Eric.
All right. Want to touch on a couple other things from the Super Bowl post-game, the local angle with Alshon Jeffrey, of course, in the same stadium last year, and I was there after that Week 17 game between the Bears and Vikings. He made that Super Bowl guarantee that was pretty vague about which team he was talking about and probably was leaning more towards the Bears in terms of who he was talking about, even though I think we all realize at this point Alshon had one step out the door. Ends up with the Eagles, and it comes true, which is pretty incredible. And it wasn't just that. He talked this week very confidently about winning the Super Bowl, winning this game, beating the Patriots. And according to his coaches, this actually goes back to even halfway through the season when Alshon was just constantly saying, we're good enough, we're going to win the Super Bowl. And I don't look at it like he was talking smack or anything. I look at it like he was just confident and really believed it and willed it to happen. Here is Alshon Jeffrey after the game last night and some of the things he had to say about his guarantee and backing it up.
We got more goals. This is just a stepping stone, man. We're trying to start our own dynasty. But right now, we're going to enjoy this one. Hey, it's this team, man, is we really a brotherhood, man. Ain't no one person that lead us. We all together.
How sweet did you talk about touching on the game with you? You
know,
and then a throw that you
made. Hey, Nick made a hell of a throw. I mean, I just made a hell of a catch. I just went up and I knew I had to make up for the first ball. He gave me a chance in the end zone, but I couldn't get my feet set. I kind of misjudged it, but at the same time, I knew on this one, I'm like, hell no, I ain't letting this one go.
Alshon, on that 7-minute drive in the fourth quarter, there was a little break where a Patriots player got injured. I saw you going up to every guy in the huddle. What were you saying at that time?
Ain't nobody stopping us, man. We only stopping ourselves. Even how many times we punt it? Ain't nobody stopping us. The only person that can stop us is us. We punt it one time. My boy Gibby said that. He said, we only going to punt one time this game. Gibby said that before the game. Shelton Gibson, he said that before the game.
Week one next year, who's throwing the ball?
Man, here you go. Check you out, man. You know who's throwing the ball, man. Carson, of course. I just believe, ain't no matter who we play, I just believe in us. We a team, man. We really a team. We really got a brotherhood, no matter what. It don't matter who's that quarterback, who's that receiver, who's that DB, who's that D-tackle, special team who's kicking the ball, man. We really a team. We believe in each other. That's all that matters. I ain't never been a part of a team like this. Only in high school. But other than that, man, this team right here, we something special.
Sounds like you play
I feel on the interception, that was my fault. Ain't nothing he did. The other play in the end zone, I was cramping. I couldn't run. I was trying to tell my coach to bring me out. Like, in the second half, I started cramping. My calves was cramping, like, the last couple minutes. That's why I went in the game.
Now, so you play for different play callers. What separates
them? Stay aggressive, man. I love Coach Peterson, man. Also, it's a great job. Him and his staff, man. Best staff I've been around, man. Coach Grow, Deuce, all them, man. They all just want the best for us.
Also, Frank said that throw to Nick Foles based off the plan that the Bears ran here last year.
Definitely was. We call it Clemson special. Clemson. I know I'm a Gamecock, but Clemson ran the play, and we took that in Chicago, and we took that here. Coach Groh put that in, and Frank them dialed it up.
What do you remember about that play when you guys ran it last year?
It worked the same way, but it was a two-pointer. I can't remember. It wasn't South Carolina, I'll tell you that. Hey, man, this who wanted me. The Eagles wanted me more than any other team. Hey, I went where I was wanted, not where I was unwanted. I went where I was wanted, man, where the best place where I can win a championship. Hey, speaking into existence, hard work and dedication. We expected that in the first half, but at the same time, we just stick with our game plan. Nick made some great throws. Read the offense. That's how we just play. Just read the offense and let Nick play. Hey, sky's the limit for offense.
You said speaking into existence. Your coaches said you've been saying that all year that you're going to win the Super Bowl.
I've been saying that until I told me and Bryce Triggs, he came to South Carolina and worked out with me for a week. I told him that we was going to win the Super Bowl. I told him that. Like, I believe that. We was going to win the Super Bowl, and that's what we did, man. Hard work and dedication, man. Just believing in one another, this brotherhood, just tight unit. Take football out of it, man. We really family.
Did that start when you said that here in this building a year ago?
I wasn't on the Eagles then.
I know, but that's the first time I heard you say it.
Hey, man, so the moment I got here, man, the work in the offseason we put in on and off the field, man, just knew it was going to be something special, man. Just keep on doubting us, man. Y'all doubting us now? I bet Vegas doubted us too, huh? Hey, we world champ. We top dogs. We ain't underdogs. We the top dogs.
You ready for a guarantee for next year?
We're going to enjoy this one, man. We're going to enjoy this one. Man, we got the best O-line in football. We got the best O-line in football. We got the best D-line in football. We got the best team in the world. Hey, I'm not a coach. I don't know what their game plan was. If he was out there, it didn't matter to us. It's a faceless opponent.
Were you a little surprised there to see him on the side?
I didn't think about that and look at it at all. I was just trying to focus on our game plan, control what we could control. When 9 minutes and 22 seconds left when we got the ball back, they went down and scored. We said this is our season. And we know coach is going to go for it. We're aggressive. We've been doing it all year. I think we probably lead the league in fourth down conversions, right? Fly, Eagles, fly. Hey, told y'all we was bringing this trophy back to Philly, man. I guarantee it, man. Told y'all. I'm out. Thank you.
Yeah, he's out.
He's out.
That's the most I've heard Alshon talk after a game.
I was going to say, he was pretty open and candid with you guys there.
Well, normally, he won the Super Bowl.
Yeah. What was it? So what's the
Let's get some insider reporter stuff from you, Adam Hogue, because I'm curious. Mm-hmm. What's post game like at the Super Bowl? And is this your first Super Bowl you've covered?
It is. It is.
So what was it like? Is it chaotic? Do they have, like, is there one press conference room, or is it just like, go get whoever you could get?
And were you able to boost any uniforms?
Yes, dude. No. Do you have Tom Brady's jersey?
Here's the thing about that, and seriously, I was not able to go talk to Jake Elliott, the Eagles kicker, because I was not granted access to the locker rooms. They limited the locker room access to only certain reporters, and mainly the ones that were in the actual press box, you know, working for the major newspapers.
And reporters, yeah.
Who was outside? Were there bouncers outside the locker room?
Well, they actually, you had to scan your credential.
Is that new, or is this normally what they do?
Brand new because of Brady's jersey getting stolen last year.
So you had to wait, like, in a press conference room for then whoever they brought you guys? Is that how it worked?
Right. So there was a press conference room, and then on each side of that, there was a separate room for both. So one room for the Eagles, one room for the Patriots, and they have podiums set up, multiple podiums, like six or seven of them for each team, and they bring the most notable players to those podiums, like Alshon Jeffrey, anybody who had a big impact in the game, the quarterbacks, obviously, even the coordinators were in there talking. But if you wanted to go get somebody a little bit more obscure, like Jake Elliott, who's from LaGrange and a Lyons Township graduate, who has a local connection, I couldn't get to him. I scanned my credential at the locker room, and it said access denied. So, thanks, guy that stole Tom Brady's jersey.
So, any free swag, souvenirs, stolen or otherwise?
They hook you guys up?
Let's see. They had a little shop set up in the hotel this morning where everything was 50% off. So, I bought James a little Super Bowl football.
That's cool.
Yeah, brought a little something home for him, if I ever do get home.
Right? It feels like you've been there a long time. How many days have you been up there?
Since last Monday. So it's been
a full week.
Oh, yeah.
You have family up there, don't you, though?
I do. I got a lot of family
up
here.
Did you get to see any of them, or did you stay with them, or how far are they from Minneapolis?
Didn't stay with them. One of my uncles is a little bit farther away. One is like right outside St. Paul. My grandpa lives right outside St. Paul. So I had dinner with them a couple nights this week. Saw my grandpa, too. He's 91, so it's great to see him.
Do they know Tom Brady's family? Because I know that was a big storyline this week. Tom Brady's spending his childhood summers in upstate Minnesota.
I like that storyline.
So do I. I thought that was a cool little connection. I did, you know, the town, it's the story I was reading is like a town of 250 people. Like half of them felt like were so like a friend or a family member. So they're up in Vikings territory. And NBC, by the way, I wanted to get to this just a touch. That I think they do the best broadcast of games, Sunday Night Football, the overall production has been and I think still is just the best sports production network. I think they do it classy. I think they do it right. Their coverage Sunday was great. I mean, considering how much they're putting into the Olympics and the Super Bowl in the same year, to have a full force of people in Minneapolis, and Dan Patrick is great. I know Costas wasn't up there for whatever reason you want to think he's not up there, but I don't know. Just overall, I just feel like NBC's Sunday Night Football is just such a class production. I think they do it so well. I think it translates very well to the Super Bowl broadcast. I know a lot of people aren't completely sold on Collinsworth on the actual the commentating, but I think Al Michaels is still sharp, and I think he's still great even after all these years. So I think NBC just does an awesome job of sports production.
I can give you a little insight on their team, too. And by the way, it gets backed up by they win the Emmys a lot for their Sunday night broadcast. I have a good buddy of mine I went to high school with who works in that truck. He does the graphics for the A-team. He travels with Sunday Night Football the whole year. And he's a St. Ignatius grad, Edison Park native from the Chicago area. Does a great job. I once walked into his apartment in Manhattan, and there were 7 Emmys just standing there on the table. I was like, dude, you have 7 Emmys.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, I do. And they've been here since last Wednesday.
Wow.
That's when they got here. So it gives you an idea how much work goes into the Super Bowl broadcast.
And I know Dick Ebersol is a huge pull in NBC and making it what it is. He's a big-time exec for NBC Sports. Yeah. I think he's still working with them. But he was actually profiled in the 30 for 30 XFL that ESPN did, because it was NBC, remember, that was partnered with
the XFL. They were broadcasting games, if I remember correctly. Or Ebersol was brought over for production stuff. But you saw some stuff in the XFL, like the overhead camera. That's just a staple. I mean, that's a must pretty much in every game now, not even the primetime games. The XFL and Ebersol and Vince McMahon, those were the pioneers of some of that stuff. But he's had a huge role in it, and that's why he gets paid the big bucks by NBC.
And by the way, a lot of those guys headed straight to Korea now for the Olympics.
Yeah. Yeah,
so 12 days here in Minnesota and then straight to Korea.
I was joking around. I'm like, I feel like I'm going to be watching NBC for like a month straight from like, you know, all the weekend cover. I don't think I turned off NBC this weekend. I mean, a little bit of golf here and there, but it was just nonstop Super Bowl stuff. And they had some great pregame production stuff. I guess back to where we were with the Brady stuff. They had some really good interviews with family members and friends from Brady's days up in Minnesota, which I thought were great.
What did you guys think about the halftime show?
Okay, Joe, your thoughts?
I think that it could have been better.
I was underwhelmed. For JT, underwhelmed, I thought I was very cookie cutter. I love Justin Timberlake. I think he's extremely talented, but it just, I don't know, nothing really stood out. And I feel like Bruno Mars should just be a guest appearance every single Super Bowl halftime show. I feel like he's been there the past 5 years. It just doesn't feel right if that guy just doesn't pop out and do some sort of dance on the stage and entertain everyone.
How did it sound on TV? Because inside the stadium, it sounded awful for like the first half of it. Like you could barely hear Justin. It was mostly the background singers.
Yeah, I heard, I'm going to be completely honest, I was kind of like bouncing between rooms in my house because we had a party, and I was just kind of watching it. I went back and watched some of it, but I saw people on Twitter and social media posting about how crappy the sound
was. It didn't sound great in the stadium, I can tell you that. It seemed like it got fixed in the second half of it and was okay, but early on, I was like, this just doesn't sound right.
Yeah, I've heard that before, that a lot of the stadium halftime show pregame stuff never really sounds great, particularly if you're near the stage, because all the it's just wired up differently for TV. I mean, as much as they want to entertain the 80,000 people in the stadium, there's 100 million people watching at home.
Yeah,
right?
I get it.
So I think that probably plays a little bit into it. I think just overall I was underwhelmed. There wasn't any like grand moment. I thought the Prince stuff was kind of cool. I don't know how that looked live, if you could even see that, Adam, but they had like a big drape type thing that was hanging, and there was some images of Prince. But I believe the song he started with, I heard people talking about this, you can go back and confirm, was the song that was playing when Nipplegate happened, when he pulled Janet Jackson's
like the first song when he was underneath the stands.
The
no, that's from his new album.
No, not that one, but one of them.
Okay.
I think he did sing the song though at some point.
Well, he managed to go through like 30 songs in 12 minutes, so I'm sure he played it.
I love how his whole thing now is he's the man of the woods. I'm like, okay, dude, you're the man of the woods from like L.A. You've been a celebrity since you were like 12. You were never chopping down trees with your father to burn wood in your cabin home in the woods. Come on, man. He's got like a camo suit going on.
You can't claim the woods now, right?
Celebrities, man. A man of the woods of Justin Timberlake. Okay.
You know what? I liked it overall. I thought the sound was a little weird. I thought, you know what? It was, again, this is made for TV, not for the people in the stadium. But it was a little confusing at the start when he wasn't on the field. He was like underneath the stands, and the people inside the stadium didn't really know how to react. They were just watching this on the screen. So
where
that
is
was
he?
Right. Again, it doesn't really matter for the people inside, but you know, on TV, I'm sure it looked fine. And I like the selfie thing at the end too.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, millennials, so you gotta connect with them somehow, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I had this thing overall. It wasn't bad. It wasn't great. I think just because I have Timberlake on a high standard that I expected more.
Yeah, I had really high expectations,
same,
too.
I thought there was going
to
be something.
I just tried to enjoy it.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was so.
Yeah, I feel the same way, Kevin. I have no axe to grind. This isn't something where I'm like, oh man, Timberlake, he's so bad. This is somebody I admire. Like he is, funny,
exactly,
super entertaining, athletic. I mean, if he put all of his energy into being a golfer, he could win a major.
Right, it'd be like watching.
He
LeBron
is actually an incredible golfer.
Yeah, he is really good. He plays in all sorts of pro-ams and stuff. But it'd be like watching LeBron James and expecting like a 45 triple double performance, but he just puts up like a double double, you know, like 20 points and 10 boards, and you're like
25 and 10.
Yeah, you're like, okay, it was good. It was good, but you know, it's not like otherworldly or anything like that.
Yeah, fair enough. All right, let's get to our buried headlines. Got plenty of other things I want to sneak into the show here before we get out of here, including a little bit of breaking news. Did you guys see this in the last hour? Brad Childress is joining the Bears coaching staff.
Okay.
As apparently an offensive consultant.
Okay. I don't know how I feel about consultants.
Yeah.
You're going to consult on what? Are you a coach or not? I mean, what is he going to do? Overlook the playbook and be like, okay, guys, this looks good.
He retired. He was with the Chiefs and was left the Chiefs at the end of the season because he was retiring. So this is kind of like a semi-retirement type of position. He's Eastern Illinois, from Aurora, plenty of connections to the Chicago area. He's never coached for the Bears, coached for Illinois, and of course, probably most known to the Bears fans as the Minnesota Vikings head coach from 2006 to 2010.
Interesting.
So when's
the next shot you guys get at that Nagy or Pace or any of them? We've got to wait till like OTAs and stuff.
Probably the combine.
Gets going next month? We still have a month away from that?
It's sneaking up on us. It's the last week of February, so we're almost there.
I'm a total dork with that. I'll throw it on and watch like 2 hours of the combine. I really will. It's sad. It depends on what they're doing. I think the 40-yard dash will get me. But I don't know. I just keep it on sometimes if there's nothing on.
Happens during a lackluster time, right?
Yeah.
There's not a lot going on around the combine.
Yeah. That was the first time I recognized Adam Shaheen last year.
So you'll be there too. Is it in Indianapolis again? Is it there every year?
Yes, they have the combine there every year. That's one thing I kind of wish they would move around a little bit.
How do they not have it in Chicago?
Well, you know what I've heard that when the LA situation, when the new stadium is done, that they might have it out there. Because that new stadium is going to be have a little bit extra. It's going to be configured to host the draft,
gotcha.
Like even in the facility. And I don't know all about the stadium, but I heard that there could be a chance the combine, maybe not permanently moves, but is at least hosted there 1 year.
The 27th through March 5th, by the way.
Okay. Yeah. I should probably get that on my calendar.
Yeah, maybe start looking at hotels or something, Adam.
And hopefully I don't get stranded there. Okay, also, Brian Urlacher, of course, got in the Hall of Fame.
That was great. I was just so happy. I'm like, we would have all just been so ticked if we had to wait another year to see him get in.
Yeah. Especially because, I mean, I mentioned this in our crosstalk. It's really cool how they do it for the guys that get in. But for those that don't, I was talking to some people who were like part of the video crews that were following around David Baker, the Hall of Fame president, who was knocking on the doors.
Right.
And then there's like, I heard that like awkwardly some of the guys that didn't get in were just like had people leaving their hotel rooms. They get a phone call that they get told, hey, no one's knocking on your door.
Gotcha. I was going to ask you. Yeah. So they're all there, right? All 15 finalists and some of them.
Well, they're not all there because T.O. wasn't there.
Oh, that's right. But, I mean, I was thinking about them. Like, are they knocking on the door and telling some of these people that no, they're not?
Yeah, I think they just
kind of give them a heads up, like a text, like a breakup with.
Right.
You don't actually want to go see the person. You just shoot them a text. Hey, so you're not getting in this year. Sorry about that.
So the longer Urlacher was waiting, I think the better they felt.
Gotcha.
Because they weren't getting the phone call. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
I was happy for them.
Last thing I have, Kev, is also this was reported by Adam Schefter yesterday. Some great news that kind of got buried in all the Super Bowl hoopla. But Ryan Shazier, the Steelers linebacker, has regained feeling in his legs and started a walking routine. That has not been a good situation.
No.
He's been around, but mostly in a wheelchair and not walking. So the fact that he's able to make some progress and start walking around again is huge. I doubt he ever plays again, but very encouraging.
Love seeing that. On a much smaller scale, but this is also encouraging. I'm not trying to couple this in with Shazier, but so your headlines, I'm bouncing around here. I'm going to the world of hockey real quick for you.
Sure.
Corey Crawford could be a practice with the Blackhawks this morning. He's missed over a month now with a mysterious upper body injury, and we know how vague teams get in the NHL about revealing what's wrong, but what could keep a guy out for over a month? And he's clearly walking fine. He's not in a boot. He doesn't have an arm in a sling. What's going on with him? So he was back on the ice, which is encouraging, and they need him badly back on the ice. So I thought that was encouraging. He was having a career year before this happened.
I don't know. He was their best player.
No question. He's been their MVP. Yes. That's just a little Blackhawks hockey nugget.
Yeah,
for
I mean,
you.
If they're going to make any kind of playoff push, they need Cort Kroll.
No question about it. Since football season is over, I guess for some of us, for some of you, it probably never ends. Like people, reporters like Adam, who will be in Indianapolis in just a few weeks to cover scouting combine. This is kind of when everyone starts to focus on baseball a little bit, or at least looking ahead, right? I mean, I'll be in the desert a week from tomorrow, Adam, for the pitchers and catchers reporting, believe it or not. So I don't know how closely, Adam, you've been paying attention to the slow free agent market in baseball.
I've been paying attention. It's very, very interesting.
Yu Darvish, J.D. Martinez, Jake Arrieta, Eric Hosmer, all yet to sign. And the Athletics' Brandon Moss, there was a headline out of USA Today that's Brandon Moss says MLB players share blame for frigid free agent market. And I'm always interested when these things sort of happen, when there's labor disputes in professional sports, because it is a classic billionaires versus millionaires situation. And fans always side with the players when it comes to this stuff, right? Like, these billionaire jerk owners don't want to pay the players, right? Like, as if their life is so difficult. But then the player down the road gets a $100 million contract, and everyone's like, I can't believe these players get $100 million contracts. You know, it's like impossible. Yeah. But I'm so happy for a player to come out and say this and just be honest. You know, all these players are acting like Jake Arrieta, from what we've seen, has gotten like $100 million offers for 4 years, and him and Darvish are looking for 5-6 year deals. I don't feel bad for Jake Arrieta or you, Darvish. I totally get where the owners are coming from here. If they don't want to spend the money, don't spend the money. They're all waiting for a fat free agency market to hit next year when there's incredible players on the market.
Yeah,
I don't feel bad for the players, and they absolutely are to blame. The MLPA negotiated the collective bargaining agreement with the owners.
Yeah, they
did. The Players Association represents all the players. You guys are you're on the hook too. If you're not happy about contractual labor disputes or whatever, they're to blame too. So it was refreshing to see a guy like Brandon Moss from the Athletics come out and say the players share the blame for this cold free agent market.
That is refreshing. I really do think this is kind of a perfect storm of issues that are leading to why guys aren't being signed. And a lot of it has to do with the amount of teams that are rebuilding now. And it's just like the White Sox, it doesn't make sense for them to sign any of these guys. And then you also have teams like the Cubs and the Dodgers and the Yankees that are going to make a run at Bryce Harper and Manny Machado next year.
Well, and
they don't want to spend the money now. So it's just a bad free agent year.
And I'll go back to even the Shohei Ohtani stuff, the Japanese superstar that ended up just agreeing on unbelievable. If he waited two more years, he would have got like a $200 million contract. But part of that, like, that's on the players. That basically what they negotiated in the collective bargaining agreement, they didn't want these international players getting these $100 million contracts, because all the players that are here in the States already playing are like, whoa, 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 whoa. Why are you guys going to pay this guy $150 million? He's never stepped foot on a major league diamond before.
Mm-hmm.
But that backfired. Ohtani got, the Angels got him for nothing. Imagine if Ohtani was on an open free agent market as a 23-year-old from Japan and he would have got like a $200 million contract, even in this cold market. That would have got things going. Like, all this backfired on the players, and they negotiated this. Like, they didn't want international players to get money and get paid, initially at least. And look what it's done to them now. Look what if Ohtani, if those sweepstakes were in a different circumstances where teams were able to just give him whatever they wanted to pay, period. Imagine how much that would have got the ball rolling on the free agent market.
Yeah, it probably would have been a little bit different. Well, we got to get out of here, Kev. I appreciate you being
fun,
back
man.
There.
Yeah, get back safe. Appreciate you letting me hop on, and hopefully someday you get out of Minneapolis, Adam.
Yeah, hopefully I'll be back in Chicago tomorrow. I got a 7:20 flight tonight now.
Okay.
And they're doing the thing where I believe it's still listed on time, even though I checked the flight of where the plane's coming from.
Adam, you know what I think you should do?
Already delayed. So I don't know how that one's delayed and mine isn't.
You should start walking, dude.
You've worked very hard the past week. Mm-hmm. Just go to the airport now. Go to the bar and treat yourself to a few adult beverages, my friend. I think your work here is done.
I think that's a good idea.
All right, man. Get back safe.
All right.
Although the termies, as some call them, terminal beers, can mm-hmm. be quite costly in the airport.
Yeah.
That's where they get you.
Everything, you know, beers at the game yesterday were $15.
Were they? I don't know. I want to get to this. The Atlanta Falcons, by the way, in their new stadium, they did this like fan-friendly menu.
Yeah.
Where it's like, you know, reasonable, like $3 for a pretzel, $2 for a hot dog
had their president, Rich McKay, on the show Friday. And I finally got to talk to him about that.
It's awesome what they did, and it totally worked. Sales were up, yeah. Fans were happier.
If you missed that conversation, it's in a long list of our shows from last week. I encourage you to go back and listen to them. iTunes, Google Play. Please rate and review the show on those platforms if you don't mind. We appreciate you doing that. It's been a fun time here in Minnesota. I hope this is my last show from Minneapolis and the Mall of America. I'm ready to get out of the mall at least and be back in Chicago tomorrow. We'll talk to you then.